And this is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. I'm your host, Robbie Stanley, alongside the great Lindsey Rowley, and joined tonight as well by former Nashville Predator, Colin Wilson. We are vibing here on the show. Everybody is feeling good. Lindsey, how are you? What's going on?
I'm good. I barely made it.
Okay, you were just in time.
I know. You'll see in the background, my golden retriever, it was supposed to be 2 hours to get groomed. It took 5 hours. They called me, said, we're going to be closed by the time your show's over. Get over here now. I made it, though, Robbie. I'm here, man.
That is dedication. That's how it's done. We appreciate you joining us tonight, Lindsey. Colin, how are you? It is an honor to have you on here with us on Smashville Live.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. It's fun. It's a lot of flashbacks already hearing like a Willie Donick commercial before we hop on and things like that. It's pretty fun.
Colin, you used to do a radio show here on 102.5 The Game back in the playing days. Does this kind of bring you back to the old days of the time doing the player show?
Yeah, doing it at Dave and Buster's live.
Yeah,
the memories. I think that I have a good picture with me and Nick Spaulding during one of the shows. So it brings a lot back for sure.
Well, Colin, first off, let me be the first to just say congratulations on a fantastic NHL career. Obviously, you announced your retirement earlier this season. And I know here in Nashville, just kind of being here from the start and watching your journey here, you were always fantastic to deal with, fantastic on the ice as well for the Nashville Predators. And just want to wish you the best before we get started here because really enjoyed my dealings with you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I appreciate it. I think it was it was a fun dressing room, fun organization to be a part of, and got to get close to a lot of people, even in the media side of things as well. So it was a fun journey all around.
Colin, what's life been like now? What are you up to now since you've been retired? What's kind of the new interest now and the new interest that you have in life now that hockey and that chapter is behind you?
Yeah, I mean, currently I'm sitting on a couch in Brooklyn just finished up my statistics homework with my two dachshund wiener dogs sitting next to me. One's a puppy. So that's just the life I'm living right now. I'm in school. So doing a lot of that. I just was in Costa Rica for about a month, just kind of hanging, a lot of hip rehab. I still have to do stuff like that. So that is pretty much it. Trying not to give in too much to the hipster lifestyle of Brooklyn, but it's been good.
And the statistics homework, I got to tell you, I feel smarter immediately just sitting around with someone in my vicinity doing statistics homework.
No, it's horrible. it's so bad.
Oh, it is horrible. I got my MBA and I remember that was my least favorite class. I like struggled start to finish in that class.
Yeah, I'm getting killed here. I mean, I'm doing the psychology degree and the fact I'm having to do 5 hours a week of statistics include, and then the classes and just trying to figure it all out. It's pretty tedious work.
Colin, as you look back at your career and you kind of factor in the entire picture of it, what do you think stands out? What are you the most proud of in your NHL career?
I think I like the way that I played the game. Especially in playoffs, really like that. But the way that I was adaptable out there. I think that when things didn't necessarily go my way, you know, I could play up and down the lineup and, have some big moments and some big games. So I think that those are kind of highlights that stand out to me.
Lindsey?
Well, yeah, Colin, you know, congratulations as well. I echo everything that Robbie said. It's crazy to think my first year in the NHL, you were there and you were always so great to me as far as interviews go and things like that. So I really appreciate that. But you also made it really fun to be on the road and always joking around and lighthearted. And so I miss being around you because I miss being on the road first and foremost. But yeah, you're definitely missed. But it seems crazy that was 6-7 years ago. But you mentioned you're in Brooklyn. I used to live in Manhattan. Do you ever make it over to the big city to do anything?
Oh yeah, I take the L.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, I was just over in Manhattan seeing my physical therapist this afternoon. So I don't know, Manhattan's a bit much for me. I really enjoy being on. I enjoy being in Brooklyn a little bit. You know, you have to deal with the high rise and you get to see the city skyline, but not actually be in it, which is fantastic. When I initially moved here about 8 months ago, I was directly in Manhattan, and it was a little too much for me. I didn't like it that much. So it's nice being over here, and it feels a little bit more like community.
I love it. Well, yeah, I lived on the Upper East Side, but I had lots of girlfriends who lived in Brooklyn, and they always spoke the world of it. What's your favorite New York food? Like, are you a pizza guy? Like the cheesecake? Like, what are you eating?
I don't know. I don't have anything necessarily specific, although I guess there's like the Middle Eastern food, like the ups, like, and not to be bougie, but a little bit more like the upscale, like, it's done very well here. Like I'm getting into, I had never even had, and then this is in Middle Eastern, or maybe like baklava. Like I'd never had that as a dessert. I'm eating like tahini and things like that. And it's been so good. It's done right. So that's actually been fantastic.
Don't get me wrong. The food in Nashville is awesome, but I do miss the crazy variety of Manhattan where you can get a slice of pizza at 4 a.m. and things like that.
I can't imagine. I mean, Nashville is growing, but it's still, I mean, it's not New York City.
No, it's not. I look forward every year to going on the road to Manhattan because I love it. Well, are you keeping up with the NHL? Are you watching the Preds at all or anything like that?
I check box scores kind of like that. Okay. I told myself I was going to watch hockey or try to, and I tried. I always struggled watching hockey. I think it's great live.
Yeah.
I try to at least check on the box scores. I love watching the highlights. I like seeing goals and things like that. That's always the way I was as a kid. So, I'm aware of what Colorado and, Nashville are both doing during the year.
Nice.
Yeah. Colin, you mentioned you were in school now. Like, what's kind of the plan as you move forward here? What's kind of the long-term goal that you want to have being back in school here?
Yeah, psychology degree. Past that, I want to do a master's program in counseling, which is kind of like a poor man's PhD to be a clinical psychologist. I don't want to go that far by any means at 31, so that's kind of like the bare minimum I would need to begin to work with people. So that's the goal as of right now. I have a clinic, or one that's opening in Austin that's more geared towards mental health. And I think it's, I want to be more involved. Like I could be like, I invested in it and it's, you know, I want to be a little bit more hands-on and be able to understand things better and be able to, actually help. So that's kind of where it's at right now, but we'll see. I might just drop out because I don't want to do statistics.
Nobody can blame you on that.
That crossed my mind as well. That and accounting. Like when I was getting my MBA, I can't tell you, I seriously grew gray hairs because of those two classes.
Well, Colin, it's interesting you bring that up because, I mean, you've always been someone who I've admired because you're willing to talk about things outside of hockey and you have other interests outside of hockey as well, even during your playing days. I mean, you were always, I think, gung-ho to talk about other things outside of hockey. And you had a great piece in the Players Tribune about mental health and about kind of how the treatment on that has grown and how there's still a long way to go in that battle. Just what was your experience like from that standpoint in the NHL? And how much progress do you think has been made in that area? How much progress do you still think there is to go in that area?
Yeah, I think the NHL actually has a tremendous program for anybody who like is, I don't know if they like, not necessarily at the end isn't the way to put it, but like somebody who really needs help or somebody who just like wants maintenance, wants to talk to somebody, they actually have a really good program. And I think it is just kind of, you know, changing the stigma behind it, getting the right support, things like that. But I think it's there if guys want it. So it's actually pretty impressive. Just, you know, I wish I took advantage of it, you know, when I was 19 versus when I was 27. But I think just everybody, I wrote it just more of like a kind of a, you know, I think just being a little bit more vulnerable, a little bit more humility. And I think that the human experience is pretty difficult. Like, so just being able to put my stuff out there so maybe other people get more comfortable and willing to talk with that, so we can all just kind of admit that it's, you know, difficult at times.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do think the stigma has started to change a little bit in the NHL, not in just the NHL, but in sports in general, which has been great to see. And that passion that you have to continue to help people, I think is really cool. And like, did you know, like when you were done playing hockey, that this is an avenue that you wanted to pursue immediately? Like, has this been in the works for you for a while?
No, I'd actually, right as I was leaving Nashville, that summer is like when I began. I mean, that was also essentially what I'll call my bottom or something like that. But from there, I began experimenting in different avenues of mental health. And that's kind of where my interest grew and grew. And I'd already been like checking out things and different philosophies prior to that. But that's kind of when it became obvious that's what I wanted to do. And then honestly, with the pandemic hitting, BU allowed online learning because I didn't want to move back to Boston to take my classes. And then it just kind of, you know, the path opened up, but it wasn't necessarily something I thought I was going to want to do in that avenue. I thought I was going to go like more new agey, more new age spirituality type stuff. Well, but I was happy that a degree opened up as I'm becoming more and more fascinated by psychology.
Absolutely. Well, we are off and running here on Smashville Live with former Nashville Predator Colin Wilson, Robbie Stanley, alongside Lindsey Rowley as well. When we come back, we'll go down memory lane a little bit with Colin Wilson, a part of a lot of different eras in terms of the Nashville Predators. We'll do that coming up next. This is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in to Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley alongside Lindsey Rowley and former Nashville Predator forward Colin Wilson as well, streaming live on YouTube, on Periscope, on Facebook, and on Twitch as well. So we welcome those of you watching on those platforms. And Colin, it's interesting to kind of go down memory lane here because you were a player that was around for a long time in Nashville. You went through several different eras. I mean, I think back to, you know, 09 when you first came into the league, and the Predators, they had just gotten out of basically like a fire sale. Like, Paul Kariya's gone and Scott Hartnell's gone and all these different players, these big time players have gone, and you're kind of coming in as they're trying to put the pieces back together and rebuild things. And you're coming in basically right out of college as well as a young player under Barry Trotz. What do you remember about that time kind of transitioning from college hockey to the NHL? And what do you think was the most difficult part of that transition on the ice?
Yeah, it was, it's crazy to think that I went from, I mean, I was 19 and went into a locker room suddenly with 36-year-olds who were going home to their, you know, going home to their kids. And I think it was an adjustment because I had used my own strength so much in college. You know, and I was a big player, like 220 coming out of college. And I used that so much that one of my favorite things to do is reverse hit people, kind of like how Forsberg does. Well, either Forsberg, I guess, but like I was actually referencing Flip. But yeah, and I remember trying to do that the first couple of times, and I got absolutely killed. I tried to do it to Ovechkin, and it just hurt so bad. You know,
I think I remember that.
Yeah. even though it's like a small, I mean, it's like a small variable, but I mean, just that all around game, having to switch it up. But I really enjoyed how organized it was. The organization of the game, everybody being in the right place felt good.
What was it like kind of coming in? And you know, obviously Barry Trotz, he's still going strong. He's with the Islanders, wins the cup with the Washington Capitals. Like, Trotz, he's still getting things done at a pretty high level, but it's always fascinating to kind of hear players talk about their experience of playing with Barry Trotz, because he seems, just from my vantage point, to be a very popular figure with his former players. What was it like for you kind of coming in and breaking into the league with Barry Trotz as your coach?
It was good. He, Yeah, he was in charge of developing a young 19-year-old Colin Wilson. I think it's so that's a bit of a challenge, but he was great. I mean, he's one of those. He's just such in terms of character, which matters a lot in coaching, and I think it's like the number one. It's truly the number one thing, and having a relationship with your players. He was just a very. You could tell he's a good human being, and I think that's what has kept him in the game so long, as well as his coaching ability. But you could just tell he cared about his players, and was living and breathing the game. And I think that's kind of what kind of sticks out in my mind of having a Barry Trotz coaching.
Lindsay?
Yeah, well, Colin, I mean, you talked about playing for Barry Trotz and just being a player's coach and things like that. And I know you talk to different guys after their careers, and some say, oh, I really miss it. Some say, hey, I love having a life right now. Like, do you miss the game at all? Do you miss the NHL, or are you enjoying like the life you have now more?
Yeah, I definitely like the life I have now more, but
Yeah.
yeah, I think so. I mean, at the same time too, it's kind of hard. I mean, in terms of the article that I wrote, like having OCD and playing hockey, it was like in your face. You couldn't necessarily get away from it. I mean, with that being said, I also should reference like how great of times I had throughout my whole career as well. But no, just in terms of like the pressure, if I'm having a bad day today and I don't do well on statistics, I don't have 18,000 people watching me have a bad day.
Right.
And then the coaches and the GM and everybody I have to deal with, nobody's writing an article on my statistics. So yeah, it's
Hey,
a
don't sell
little
yourself
bit
short.
of, yeah.
About
Yeah. So yeah, it's a little bit more chill. It's a little bit more chill. So I'm enjoying that, but I do miss the game from time to time.
Well, I know also a lot of guys like say, when it's nice to have the free time to be able to travel and do different things when they get out of the league. Have you done any traveling since you've been out? Any gone anywhere really cool? I love to travel, so I'm always curious to ask.
Yeah, no, I just got back from Costa Rica, where I was there for a month. Just yeah, in Santa Teresa. It was yeah, very beautiful there. Like just a fun place to, I mean, watch the sunrise, sunset every day on the beach. Really, really chill, good food. So yeah, that was really nice. And aside from that, doing a lot of New York stuff,
Yeah.
doing the upstate Hamptons type thing. But that was before travel restrictions were kind of lifted. So I mean, I planned on retiring and traveling the world, and then COVID hit. So I guess
Yeah.
it is what it is.
Kind of threw a wrench into that. Yeah.
Sure did. Yeah.
Is there anywhere that's at like the top of your list that once all the COVID crap is over, like you really want to go there?
Yeah, I mean, Hawaii would be great. I mean, that's pretty basic, but I don't know. I do want to do Norway. I've done Finland and Sweden, and I'd like to not do those again. And during the off season too, like I would love to go, stop in Sweden and see Landeskog, and then go to Finland and see Pex. I think that'd be a pretty cool trip, and get to actually, take in the culture versus whatever my hotel offers.
Love it.
Well, Colin, we brought up earlier kind of coming into the league in the first part of your career being under Barry Trotz here with the Predators. And then, of course, you transitioned from Barry Trotz to Peter Laviolette coming in with the Predators as well. What do you remember about that time, that transition, and Peter Laviolette coming in? Like, how much different do you think the style was that Lavi brought to the table?
It was, yeah, I mean, very different, but at the same time, he was beginning to inherit the decor that he got, and so I mean, that was a great tool that he had. So all of a sudden, you're running. I mean, our team began to offense began to run through our D. We had a system where the third forward was high, so that he was pinching in all the time. We were taking care of that, and I think it just added to, the strong suit of our game. So it was very different. And then, Lavi's pep talks were great, but that was fun. I got to experience something like that, and he kept things light and in his own ways. And I don't know, he was like very nice as well. It was funny because I feel like he always wanted to snap on us, but he'd just be pushing it down and pushing it in and being like, okay, it's not your night, it's not your night. So I don't know. Looking back, that's pretty funny, actually.
Well, it is funny because I remember when they hired Peter Laviolette, and I kept thinking to myself, like, man, like, I've got pressure now. Like, if I ask a bad question, he's going to rip my head off in the press conference. And I'm like, man, if I think that way, like, what do players in the locker room feel like? I mean, it was kind of amazing to go back and think about that.
Yeah, no, for
yeah,
sure.
I worked the team, so he couldn't bite my head off.
That's true.
But it was still super, especially towards the beginning. See, it was super intimidating, those one-on-ones with Lavi, where I would just
That's
be
right.
like, tough questions, just like hold the microphone and pull back. Like, please don't be mad at me.
Yeah.
So, Colin, going back to 2012, and I think this was a big moment for the franchise, a big moment for the Predators. When you talk about Detroit and that series, Detroit had been at that point the nemesis for the Predators. It was the big rival. I know Chicago was kind of coming on at that point too, but the Predators get it done in five games against Detroit. What do you remember about that time? I mean, you had Ryan Suter and Shea Weber together. Roman Josi was just coming into the league. Ryan Ellis was just coming into the league. Hal Gill was there as well. Like, what do you remember about that time and that team and that playoff series?
I remember watching it.
Yeah.
I was getting scratched. shout out. No, it was, but I remember, honestly, I think it showed like what a big accomplishment it was when like the whole organization was at the tin roof. Yeah. Like there was like after we won that one, like all the scouts, everybody, and it was like, oh yeah, I guess like we had, you know, we've moved on. So I think it was, you know, a point to celebrate and showed, you know, the beginning of the organization taking that next step, which, you know, I think every single year just seemed to get better.
Yeah, and a big part of that series, I remember, like, there's this iconic photo of the handshake line, and, like, Shea Weber is skating up, and Nick Lidstrom is there, and that would be the last time that Nick Lidstrom played in the NHL, and it was just, it kind of felt like the changing of the guard, at least from our standpoint there. And, you know, I think Shea probably got robbed of a Norris trophy or two during his time with the Predators as well. Like, as far as playing with him, what was that like? Everybody always talks about like the respect and just kind of the level of admiration that you had for Shea Weber being a guy in that locker room while he's leading the way as captain. What was that like?
Yeah, no, when you mentioned Webby, I was like, you know what, I didn't know if you were going to ask about him. I was going to throw some stuff in and be like, yeah, he got robbed of many Norris trophies. Yes. I mean, it's so disappointing to me looking at that. The man should have won a couple Norrises for sure. He was, I don't know, still like undervalued slightly because I think he during – like to the rest of the people who probably weren't watching us game in, game out. I mean, he was just a force out there, a D man who actually played defense, who was there yep. and scored goals and played hard and was the captain. And I mean, he basically molded all these, you know, these D men, like, you know, the Yossis, the Ellis, the Ekholm. I mean, they were, it was basically like their dad. And so, I mean, I should say that for myself as well, how many times I stayed at his place in training camp. But no, I mean, just, yeah, amazing. Not enough words can be said, but I think looking back, it's a shame that he didn't win the Norris. And if they want to give it to the most offensive defenseman each year, then they should create a new category for the actual top D-man.
We talked about how intimidating Lavi was. I've never been more terrified of a NHL player than Shea Weber. I mean, scared the living crap out of me. My first year, I'll never forget, because he hates doing media stuff and stuff like that. And I'll never forget the year that he blew his knee and everything.
Yeah.
Somebody leaked it to NBC or something during the playoffs and all that. And I ran into him like out in a social setting and like obviously was never going to be like, hey, Shay, what's up? Because at that point I was still terrified. And he crutches over to me and he goes, I heard that you leaked about my knee. Like dead straight face. And like I could just feel all the blood just like drain just from my fear. Face. And I was like, no, I swear I didn't. And he was like, ah, Lindsay, I'm just screwing with you. Like, oh God. And from then on, we were cool. But like, that was the breaking point of like, I knew I was okay with Shea Weber.
Well, and Colin, like it's funny she brings that up because, like, it, you know, obviously, like, I think fans have, like, this certain image of Shea Weber, and he gets in front of the camera, he's all business, he's all serious. But the guy was hilarious, like, off the camera. Like, you talk about a great personality. Like, he was awesome.
Yeah, no, he liked having fun. I mean, it wasn't the guys didn't love him just because he was serious all the time. He had that lighthearted side to him, and yeah, I mean, just all around great guy. But yeah, I can't imagine he'd be getting the reviews if he was that serious all the time.
So, that's right. He knew
when to be serious, and that's why he was the captain.
That's right. You're exactly right. Smashville Live off and running here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. When we come back, we'll continue to go down memory lane with former Nashville Predators forward Colin Wilson, including a couple really important playoff runs for the history of this franchise as well. All that coming up next. This is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley alongside Lindsey Rowley and former Nashville Predators forward Colin Wilson as well. Halfway through the show here, it's been a great time catching up with Colin Wilson here on the show. And Colin, I want to get into a couple of really, really important playoff runs for the history of this franchise. Thinking back first to 2016, in the first round series against Anaheim, of course, leading into the 7-game series against San Jose as well. What do you remember about that Anaheim series in 2016? And I guess the first memory that comes to mind to me for you in that series would be in game 7, a huge goal for the Predators in game 7 to help the Predators win that game and advance to the second round. First time the Predators had ever appeared in a game 7 to that point. What stands out to you about that series when you look back on it?
Just a heavy, heavy series. Just two, like, really two teams going to war. I hated Kessler.
You were not alone.
I remember, me and James Neal and I, like, we both in warmups do, like, the skating at the red line, and Kessler would stand there with 1 foot over, and we were both ice plowing them the whole time, like, doing warmups. But no, it was just an incredible series. And that game, I just got a feeling, like, that feeling I had before the game where I was just like, oh, I'm going to score. Like, I just don't know how many, which only ended up being one. So it's not as cool as it sounds, but I felt, you know, going into that, it was just pretty hype game 7.
Yeah. You mentioned, like, the hatred between the two teams, and obviously that would grow again the next year in 2017. And we'll get to that coming up here in just a few minutes, but just, like, being on the ice, like, I feel like growing up watching the NHL and watching hockey in the, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, like, you think of these rivalries between the Red Wings and the Avalanche and, like, all these different physical battles, and the game, you know, it moved away from that to a certain degree, but, like, just as a casual viewer, I think you could sense, like, literal hatred between the Predators and the Ducks in these series. And I don't know how often that really happens anymore in today's NHL.
Yeah, I mean, you put Corey Perry on one team and James Neal on the other, and things just kind of happen. Yeah, we were going at it. We played them a lot. We played them a lot in playoffs, and they were always heavy series. So yeah, it was a team I didn't like playing, and it was always a tough game. So I mean, it was actually so crazy moving from, because when we beat them in game 7, I think it was 2 days later that we were playing San Jose.
Yep.
Like, we went from, like, every whistle somebody was starting something. So, and all of a sudden against San Jose, it was like the whistle would blow and guys are looking around getting ready to get punched in the head or something. Nothing was happening. It was like very, it felt weird. All of a sudden the intensity kind of changed. So.
Lindsay?
You mentioned, you know, obviously a lot of hatred between the Preds and the Ducks back then, but I mean, lots of rivalries have developed over the years with the Predators. When you were playing, what's the first name that comes to mind as the player that you just hated to play against? You just really didn't like the guy, as far as, and maybe he's a great guy off the ice, but you just hated playing this guy.
I mean, yeah, Kessler.
I figured you might say that. Or,
you know, there's Kessler, Phaneuf, and Brown on LA. And I actually met Phaneuf at Van Riemsdyk's wedding. And it was funny talking with him, but yeah, I hated playing him too. Because I was a left winger. he tried to come across every time I was just trying to get the red line and dump it in. And like my whole, we only played him twice a year, but he tried to come and try to take my head. So we had a bunch of conversations on the ice and stuff, but he ended up being a great guy. So yeah, those guys.
Was there ever a guy like on the total opposite that like was always funny from another team on the ice that you were like ever got into, like, I don't even know, something with on the ice who you're just like, he's always going to have something smart to say?
Yeah, Giroux had a couple good comments to me. We like kind of knew each other through some people, but it was actually funny. Like Tyson Barry, who's like now one of my best friends, when we played against each other, we'd always like look at each other and be like, "Hey, what's going on?" We just kind of like realized we were buddies or something, and we had never met before. So something like that. And Parento is the same way. For some odd reason, I always spoke with him at the red line, and then he ended up getting traded to our team. So it's, I don't know. Those were two significant guys I was vibing with who became friends.
So you bring up Parento, a part of that 2017 run. Was there a certain time that you knew that maybe that was going to be something special from your group in terms of the playoff run you're about to go on? Obviously, you know, just from a media perspective, looking at the Chicago series, you guys were the heavy underdogs. And I think there was some belief locally that could happen. Obviously some belief internally that you could go beat the Blackhawks, but was there a specific moment that you remember thinking, okay, like this could be something really special here?
The ability to sweep obviously is pretty impressive, but I also remember Fiddler's goal against St. Louis. Mm-hmm. That was a huge goal that it was just kind of like, okay, things are aligning. We have that spark that, you know, we've had other players go down and other guys stepping up and finding ways to win. And I think that's when you realize that you could be in for, you know, a long playoff run or, you know, winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, I remember that goal in St. Louis. I mean, I think it was that game, it was the same game that Fiala went down with that injury. And then Fiddler comes back and scores that goal. I mean, it was just moment after moment in that playoff run of different guys on different nights making huge plays, the St. Louis series, and then the Anaheim series again in the Western Conference final. Like I remember after game four, like if you're getting on the team plane and Joey's not on the team plane and Mike Fisher's not on the team plane and thinking, oh my goodness, like it's 2-2. This series has been an absolute war so far. Like, are they going to have enough bodies to get through this? And what happened in the next two games in game five and game six was just absolutely unbelievable. Like, what do you remember about that time?
I remember Sisson's hat trick. Insane. I mean, you talk about guys stepping up. The guy, I mean, we got to eliminate Anaheim. What did we get? I was shot like 42-13.
Yeah,
we got pumped and found a way to win. And Sizzy had the hat trick and everything, and it was just, I mean, that's really what I remember most, being like, okay, well, we have, you know, we're finding ways to win and we have a lot of guys down. Obviously Fiala's injury was just horrible. And Joey, you just show up to the rink next day. Like, I don't know. I had already showered and gone home, and I guess his quad had blown up at that time. So you're just kind of, yeah, you're learning about that a little bit later, but yeah, I mean, that was a big moment. I'm just going to keep saying Sizzy's name. Just keep bringing everybody back to that hat trick because it was huge.
Well, Lindsay, like, you know, we've been in the building for a lot of big moments and a lot of moments where the crowd has gone nuts. Like when Sizzy scored that hat trick goal, like that may have been the loudest I've ever heard any building my entire life.
Oh, I totally agree. I remember it clear as day. And I just remember thinking, holy cow, where did Colton Sissons come from? And I mean, he's always been really skilled, but he just, that night was incredible. I think we really saw the Colton Sissons that we see now in the making back then. And it was just really impressive. And I mean, Colton's one of those guys, he's like the easy guy to cheer for. He's so nice and fun and always like, hey, how are you? And always says hi to everybody. So it's like, it just was like an extra bonus to see him towards the beginning of his career starting to break out. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it was amazing. We're off and running here on Smashville Live, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We've got one more segment coming up with former Nashville Predators forward Colin Wilson. We'll do that next. This is Smashville Live here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Mm-hmm. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day here on Smashville Live, presented by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Robbie Stanley alongside Lindsey Rowley and former Nashville Predators forward Colin Wilson. We've loved catching up with former Nashville Predators forward Colin Wilson here on the show today. So, Colin, we've gone down memory lane a little bit here. I just want to ask you, like, as you look back at your time in Nashville, both on the ice, but, you know, also kind of growing from a kid out of college to a man, like what stands out to you about your time in Nashville? Like, as you look back on your memories there, what I guess is the fondest part of your time here?
Hard to say. I'm going to be very vague, but just the whole experience in general, I think it was pretty cool. I mean, you talk about growing, but being able to grow alongside a city at the same time and a hockey organization, I think was pretty special. Because I mean, the city, I mean, I don't even recognize it. I don't even recognize it now. You know, I think I've used this before, but I mean, we were finishing up games and trying to get out to the Cheesecake Factory in Green Hills because it was the only restaurant that was like open after a game. And now it is what it is. So, to be able to grow alongside that. And I mean, yeah, the fans, the crowds, the playoffs, all the runs, it was, pretty fantastic experience. Tin roof was good too.
You can't mention living in Nashville. Not mention tin roof in Midtown. I was there the other night, actually. Yeah. But Colin, you mentioned, you know, the runs and just growing with the city and everything. And you also talked about Shea Weber earlier in the show, but I mean, you got to play alongside some pretty awesome guys throughout your whole career with Nashville. Mm-hmm. Who would you say is your top one or two favorite teammates that you played with, both on the ice and just having in the locker room?
Webby was great. I mean, it's hard to like, I love Joel Ward. I love Smithson, those guys who kind of like took me under their wing with Suits and Belak, Legwand. I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I loved everybody. I mean, I had a lot of good teammates, like amazing teammates, but I mean, I don't know. I mean, me, Nealer, Hutz were a good time. Spalling, a very good friend of mine as well. I don't know. I mean, I could like keep going down memory lane, but everybody was great. Peck, I mean, I don't know how I didn't mention Peck's there too. And Yost was with them pretty much my whole career. Yeah, I could keep going, but I enjoyed everybody.
Do you stay in touch with some of those guys like more often? I know you mentioned some of the guys you're obviously still close with, but do you stay in touch with some of the guys still that you were close with?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, with Nealer, I mean, Spalls and I have been talking quite a bit as well. I mean, other guys were checking in every now and then. So it's always fun because we get to take our trips down memory lane, especially, I mean, with somebody like Spalls or Pex or, you know, Webb, somebody who's been around from, you know, the beginning, to be able to go that deep is pretty fun. I even texted Marty Erat. That was fun. That was a good time. So.
I think he's living in Nashville now too.
Yeah, no, he is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Colin, like you mentioned those guys that you played with. And I think obviously like when you get done playing, that's probably what you take with the most is just the relationships along the way and the friendships that not only are there with hockey, but are there, you know, outside of hockey. And as you go through life as well, just what's that like being a professional athlete? Because I think sometimes you view it as a fan as, okay, this is this person's job. This is what they're supposed to do. And you kind of get viewed as like robots to a certain degree, just based on, okay, this player makes this amount of money. That player makes that amount of money. But these are real human people. These are real human relationships that are involved as well. Like the aspect of building together that team chemistry and having that right set of camaraderie, how difficult is that to come across and how special was that during your time in Nashville to build that up with some guys, like you said, that were there from the beginning with you?
Very, very special. I think, I mean, that goes to show you that they were bringing in good people into the locker room, trying to keep that culture there. And you just felt it from, you know, the whole time that you were there, that somebody was kind of there to take care of you. I still remember, you know, Webbs and Suits, who it's crazy to think, I thought they were so much older than me and they were 24, and you know, for them to take me under their wing and try to help me grow as a human. I don't know. I feel bad for them for having that. at 19, I think the couple times they didn't know what to do. But, you know, I think, yeah, it was a special place to be. And I mean, that's top down, you know, from the organization. I don't know. Everybody was great. So yeah, I think good on the organization.
Lindsay?
No, Colin, I was just going to say, I know you're living in the Big Apple, but do you have any plans to come back? And I know, hey, Nashville's still growing, so you got to come back and visit.
Yeah, no, I still have a house there, but
do you? Cool.
Yeah, I'm still 12 South, so gotta check in on it. I literally just texted some people. I was saying like it's been too long. I'd love to get there, and yeah, I mean I want to. I'll probably be there in the next month or so. So
I was gonna say Tin Roof misses you. I mean, you got to go back for old time's sake.
I would love to. I mean, it's so funny taking people there.
It's got to be the Demumbrian location, right? Not a
road. Oh yeah.
Oh no, it's Demumbrian. That's that was the place. It was Cheers for any local Nashville person for sure.
Yeah, my dad experienced for the first time, and he had a good time. Let's put it that way.
Here. Hard to have a bad time.
That's right. And Colin, it's amazing to kind of, and you mentioned the growth of the city. Like it's crazy. Like you look downtown now, I mean, there are cranes everywhere. I mean, it feels like they're building something different every single day, to the point where like I've been in Nashville my entire life. Like I was born and raised here, and like to think back of what Nashville looked like even before you got here and to where it is now, like it's a totally different city. Like it's not even recognizable.
No, I mean, I can only imagine, because I was about to hop in and complain, thinking like I'm a local, you know, because I got there in 2009. You know, it is insane. Yeah. And I do miss, I feel like I found the sweet spot in Nashville, and I'm sure, I mean, it's great. The amount of bridesmaids on those wheel taverns,
the pedal taverns. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Oh, they're still here.
Yeah. So I'm sure it's great that there's so much of that, but yeah, no, I still miss it, but it's, yeah, I can only imagine for somebody like yourself seeing it, but I got to come in, right beforehand and kind of experience, you know, the hole in the wall type places that I'm sure people are trying to find on a Yelp review now. So,
So you mentioned you had some statistics on work. Is there more statistics to get to after this? Like, did you need a mental break from statistics to come join us here on the show?
Yeah, I actually have it. I have it as the window behind the window. And then I have to do a homework for social psych, and oh man, what a time. Yeah.
Oh man, I do not miss homework. I do not envy you, my friend. That is no fun.
No, not too bad if you got two wiener dogs next to you.
That's exactly. True. I know. You say like you're in between a wiener dog sandwich.
Yeah. Well, like, did you, I mean, obviously you were in college at BU, and then now you're back taking classes again. Like, did you always want to go back to school? Like, was there a plan to go back to school at some point, or is this just something that naturally happened?
Yeah, just more naturally happened. I always said I would only go back if it was actually something I wanted to do. So like, I wouldn't just go back to get a degree in history or something like that. I mean, not to rip on anybody who got a history degree, right? I wanted to go to something. I didn't want to just do it to accomplish it. So yeah, again, like with it remote learning, the fact that I get and live and do whatever I want and take class, like, you know, I was doing class and then leaving and going on the beach in Costa Rica, which is pretty, you know, a pretty good gig. So yeah, it just kind of happened organically, and I'm so happy it did, because I don't know. I like psych.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Colin, it's been so much fun kind of hanging with you for this hour and going down memory lane. And obviously we just wish you the best of luck as you move forward, dude. It's really cool what you're doing. Really cool to see you back in school and just the path that you're taking now. And really appreciate you taking time to join us tonight, man. It means a lot.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was fun going down memory lane.
It was absolutely fun. Good to see you, Colin.
Yeah, absolutely. The Nashville Predators back in action tomorrow, taking on the Carolina Hurricanes. Preds are rolling right now, 13-3-0 in their last 16. The vibe is strong with the Nashville Predators right now. For Robbie Stanley and for Lindsay Rally and Colin Wilson, this has been Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. Slapshot Radio coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.